Can there be an encounter more devastating than that between victim and killer? Can there be a killer who truly believes such a terrible act can be without repercussion?
As every hour passed, it just felt worse and worse and worse. You just have this feeling that something is badly wrong.
This was a killer who hoped the victim would never be found, who masked truth in a smokescreen of lies.
This is a case that will continue to haunt me because there are still unanswered questions that gnaw at me to this day.
Questions at the heart of the crime itself and over the recklessness which followed.
What a sad way to end. They destroyed parts of our lives and they destroyed my ability to say goodbye.
In over two decades of working as a detective, this was the most callous murder I had ever been engaged on.
But a smokescreen may be blown aside by relentless investigation and the killer's own greed, exposing a path towards justice and a life behind bars. Trowbridge, a small town in a peaceful corner of Wiltshire, close to the Somerset border. Once there were 2,000 woolen mills here, and at its peak of prosperity, it was known as the Manchester of the West, and in 1889 became county town. But lately, times have been harder. It's 2008, and Antonietta Guarino, who's lived here since 1996, has also fallen on difficult times, though works hard not to show it.
Buongiorno, Don. I am bringing you the sunshine.
Mum was larger than life, really. She'd come into a room and you knew about it.
She had to retire early, in her 50s, suffering from rheumatoid arthritis and depression.
And how was young Jack doing?
Oh, the boy's doing good.
She was a very, very warm and loving person. She was always thinking about others.
Antonietta Guarino was born in Italy in 1947, one of seven children. When she was 18, she met and married a man, Luigi, who brought her to England where he'd been living.
Però andrà tutto bene, giusto?
She spoke no English, but they took evening classes. Whilst he worked in a factory, Antonietta took jobs cleaning and ironing and became a care assistant for the elderly.
She had loads of jobs. Crazy lady. She loved it, she never complained.
They settled at Chertsey in Surrey and soon had a small family.
I felt it was a very normal childhood, but on reflection, I realised that it was a little bit different because, you know, my mum was a young woman, you know, she was in her 20s when I was a child. We ate different food from everybody else and we did different things at the weekend. But I had a happy childhood and my mum was a good mum.
But as a couple, Antonietta and Luigi grew apart.
Well, mum and dad got divorced when I was 18 and mum had waited really until we'd grown up. She'd wanted the divorce and dad was quite upset with that. But it was amicable.
Antonietta moved to Wiltshire, to a chalet bungalow on a quiet street in Trowbridge, and settled into the local community.
Let me take these.
Oh, you're very kind, David. Thank you.
That is heavy.
She worked once again as a carer before retiring on a meagre pension.
Okay. I'm on bread and cheese from now on.
From time to time, she boosted her income.
How about something?
Ah, oh, that is lovely, where everyone will see it. Oh, thank you, Don.
Perfect.
Now, fingers crossed.
She decided to rent out her upstairs bedroom. In October 2008, a 24-year-old man came with his mother to view the room.
Dad, Jack, come in.
I'm Mark, and this is my mum.
Hello, pleased to meet you.
A little bit strange that a 24-year-old goes and views a rental with his mum, but, you know, mum said he was nice.
This is lovely.
Mark Riley told Antonietta he worked at Virgin Mobile in Trowbridge.
Sometimes, if you're very good, this is the front room.
Brilliant.
You like a film?
I love films, yeah.
I sometimes have them on.
My boyfriend is going to love this.
Ah, boyfriend.
Are you cool with that?
Boyfriend, cool. Boyfriend here, staying overnight, not cool.
Okay.
House rules. Strict house rules, I'm afraid. You cool with that?
Absolutely.
You sure?
Absolutely.
Mark put down a month's deposit and moved in, with the help of his mother.
he was a little bit, perhaps, not intrusive, but he spent more time with her than the other lodgers.
Are you sure you're all right with that?
That looks perfect.
Oh, that's lovely.
I like it.
He seemed to need a lot of reassurance from my mum that he was doing the right thing at the right time.
This one. This I love. One of my favourite films.
Oh.
I've been watching it with my grandson.
Oh, that's nice.
You're gonna love it.
But the time they spent together was limited. Often, Mark shut himself away from view. As Christmas drew near, Antonietta told friends she had misgivings.
No, I'm pretty sure. Coffee cups, that sort of thing, when I'm out.
That's not on. That's just not fair.
And I was perfectly clear about no guests being allowed.
At Christmas, Antonietta headed off to Surrey to be with her family.
Mum was excited. She loved Christmas and she'd spoil the kids and me and everybody rotten.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, my darling. It's for you. I expect that Santa will be bringing lots more too. Tom. Oh, grazie.
Over Christmas and New Year, Mark Riley, back at the house in Trowbridge, rang Antonietta repeatedly.
Even I was getting a bit annoyed with this constant calling.
You're joking. You talk to him, Julie. Is it driving me mad?
I can't answer it. What am I supposed to say?
Mum said to my wife, I don't know why Mark keeps ringing me. He's ringing me all the time.
He'll just be saying he's emptied the bins or something. Just say whatever you want.
On the 3rd of January, Antonietta set off for home in Trowbridge.
Oh, lovely to see you.
Yes, grazie. Cara per tutto. It's been a wonderful. Oh, my little princess. Oh, I'll miss you so much. Bye-bye, Mr. Snowman.
It was to be the last time that they would see each other. Antonietta Guarino, 61-year-old divorcee, had returned to her bungalow at Trowbridge in Wiltshire after spending Christmas with her family in Surrey. It was January the 3rd, 2009, and at 4 o'clock she phoned her daughter to say she'd got back safely.
Everything is fine.
Well, it was so lovely to see you.
In truth, all was not fine. Living upstairs was a lodger, 24-year-old Mark Riley. He'd been specifically told there should be no guests, particularly no overnight guests.
What if it did happen?
You have to say something.
But what if I'm wrong?
There were further concerns about Mark. He had stopped paying the rent.
Plenty of excuses.
He's really taking advantage of you.
But if I tell him to go, I maybe never see the money, you know?
Early in the new year, tensions deepened.
I promise you, the money's coming through, OK?
We had a deal.
I know, but...
What?
My boyfriend is in a bad place, personally, and the place where he's living.
No. I told you no, Mark.
I'll pay you, OK?
Ha! Yes, well, I've seen that. No guess. I'm not having two of you living up there.
She called me soon after and she said, I've said no, what do you think, to me? And I said to her, absolutely not. You know, you've never let couples stay before, so why would you change your mind this time?
To add to her problems, Antonietta had flu. On January the 7th, she went for a blood test relating to her osteoporosis, then put herself to bed. That evening, she called a friend and said she was unwell. He came to see her with some fruit.
You are so kind to me.
There you
Thank
are.
Thank you.
How's that throat?
Oh, still there. Bad. But this help.
The following day, a friend phoned her at lunchtime. Antonietta said she wasn't well, but they'd meet up in a couple of days. But over the next 2 weeks, her family had no word from her.
It was quite a busy period and... You know, I wasn't in daily contact with my mum, but how it normally worked was mum would either speak to my sister or to my wife or to me or to my son or somebody.
And I remember going out with some friends in one evening and I said, you know, my mum is not talking to me for some bizarre reason. She's not returning any of my calls.
But on Sunday, January the 25th, at a family get-together, it became clear no one had spoken to her. Later that day, Antonietta's brother phoned from Switzerland to say he hadn't heard from her. Then a friend of Antonietta's rang to say the same thing.
At that point, I did realise something in me just snapped, and I realised there was something very, very wrong. It was quite late, and I just told my husband, I said, you've got to phone up the police. I've had enough of this. Something in my head just said there was something really wrong.
They called the police, and Julie and her husband decided to drive to Wiltshire next morning.
My wife left a very, very stern message for Mark Riley, saying, listen, when you get in, give us a call. We've called the police, and must have been about 1 o'clock in the morning, and the phone rang, and it was Mark Riley on the phone.
Hello.
Hiya, it's Mark.
Right. You got the message?
I did, yeah.
Do you know where my mum is?
And there was something about the way he answered. I felt quite aggressive. I must have been a bit fired up, and I was questioning him.
Well, the last time I saw her, she was in bed, ill, and I was too. And as she got a bit better, I went round to one of her friends' house. She wasn't feeling well.
We'll check that out.
My sister's coming round in the morning to pick up my mum's phone book. We're going to check with her friends, and you need to call the police, right?
Nah, look. I've had an idea. She's left a phone charger in the kitchen. That's why she's not been in contact with you.
It just didn't feel right at all, you know.
In fact, hours earlier, and apparently unbeknownst to Mark, police had already visited Antonietta's house.
About 9:30 on that Sunday evening, a local support officer, Pippa McVeigh, went to the address. The house was unoccupied. She made some initial look arounds and took a look in the dustbin.
She found objects perfectly ordinary in themselves, but which didn't seem to match what Antonietta might have thrown out.
There was a set of almost brand new saucepans thrown into the dustbin, along with some apparently fresh, clean tea towels and some boxes and so forth that she'd felt looked out of place.
If you ask, you know, why does one get suspicious in these circumstances? Well, sometimes it's a combination of minor feelings.
She called for backup, and police entered the house through an unfastened window leading to Mark's bedroom. They saw nothing amiss, but left a note asking him to ring.
Next morning, my phone rang, and it had my mum's name on the phone. And, you know, I had this feeling, a slight feeling of elation. I thought it was my mum. And I answered the phone, and it was Mark Riley.
Mum?
Hi, it's Mark.
Oh.
Your sister's still coming down?
Yeah, she's on her way.
Tell you what, you can tell they've been here now, Tom.
Who've been?
Your mum will not be happy, I'm telling you.
What are you talking about?
Mad, everywhere you look. It's all over the carpet and that, Tom.
Look, the police need to speak to you.
Oh, Tom, the filth. It's unbelievable.
Well, clean it then.
Next morning, Julie and her husband arrived seeking Antonietta's phone book so they could contact the friend where she might be staying.
Hiya, I'm Mark. How was your journey?
Mark greeted us.
Can I do you a cuppa?
No, I'm okay, thank you.
He'd taken the morning off work so that he could meet us.
Your mum's really nice. We spent loads of time together.
Yeah.
I wasn't interested in chit-chat. And he seemed to be, he was following me around the house and saying how nice my mum was and everything. And at the time, I was not interested. I just wanted to find her phone book.
She's been teaching me how to recycle.
Right.
We'll have those. We watched them together.
And it was some sort of horror film. And I said, you know, in my head was thinking, my mum doesn't even like horror films. So that struck me as weird.
Antonietta's phone book had disappeared. So had her phone bills, which would have revealed useful numbers. But then, Julie's husband found a birthday book. It had the friend's surname and date of birth. The police tracked down her number.
And she really was our last effort at seeing where Mum was. That was the only place Mum could be. So, and I spoke to Mum's friend, and she said, I haven't spoken to your mum for 2 weeks. And I didn't know what to think. I just thought, this is all going so wrong.
Though this was still officially a missing person inquiry, police too were starting to fear the worst.
There'd been no sight or sound of Antonietta for a considerable period of time. I considered that to be extremely worrying and suspicious, and designated this a Category A investigation. That means I was putting a lot of resources into the search for Antonietta, considering that it was likely to be a murder inquiry.
That night, January the 26th, having received no phone call from Mark Riley, police returned to the house. They noted Antonietta's car was missing. The house was empty and they forced entry. They took Antonietta's toothbrushes in case DNA was needed, her passport and her bank details, so activity on her account could be checked. They also searched the bedroom upstairs.
They knew Mark Riley was a lodger, but there was clearly clothing in the house belonging to two people, two males. And they also found a passport in the name of David Carl Burstone. Another note was left for Mark Riley, asking him to urgently make contact with the police.
The following day, Mark did call the police. He said David Carl Burstone was his lover, and he hadn't seen him for a couple of days. He said Antonietta was with a sick friend. He'd spoken to her and she'd seemed fine. Neighbours, though, told police Mark had told them Antonietta was visiting a sick grandchild in Italy. Police checked Antonietta's bank account.
An extraordinary amount of usage had been made in the preceding 2 weeks. Regular amounts of money withdrawn to the maximum withdrawal limit, together with extreme use of credit facilities to buy things through the internet.
Police checked CCTV footage of the cash machines. They saw two men taking out money. One of the men was Mark Riley. The other was the boyfriend he'd wanted to move into the house, David Carl Burstone. In total, £3,000 had gone from Antonietta's account, including daily maximum cash withdrawals of £250.
And it was on that basis that I scaled this up from a missing person inquiry to a murder inquiry.
That same day, Tuesday the 27th of January, a red Ford Fiesta pulled up outside Trowbridge Police Station. The car was being driven by David Carl Burstone, Mark's lover. Mark walked into the police station asking how he might help with the investigation. Police suddenly had a dilemma and potentially a golden opportunity.
That's Mark with a C.
Place the pair under surveillance and hope they might lead detectives to Antonietta, or arrest them and be given tightly limited time to find crucial further evidence, but with powers to search them and Antonietta's house.
Mark Riley?
I decided to arrest him there and then in the police station.
Mark Riley, I'm arresting you on suspicion of the murder of Antonietta Gorino.
Are you David Carl Burstone?
Yeah.
Mr. Carl Burstone, would you like to step outside the car, please?
There was an immediate indication the gambit had paid off.
Empty your pockets, please, Mark.
Who's in possession of £400 in cash and Antonietta's debit card. Clearly that was significant for me and required an explanation.
I walked in the front door of my house and my wife and my sister were at the laptop computer and they were looking at the internet. It was a very short thing.
They've arrested two men. And for murder in Wiltshire.
Wiltshire's a big county and you can try and kid yourself that it's... It's not to do with you, but I knew it was to do with me and my mum.
I said, I'm just going to go outside. So I went outside and at that point my phone rang and it was my husband saying, you know, the police are going to come down this evening. You need to come home.
Officers said Antonietta was still officially missing and arrest on suspicion of murder merely gave them extra time to investigate. But for the family, it felt like their deepest fears were confirmed.
And I remember calling my best friend and shouting down the phone at her and saying, you wouldn't believe what they've done to my mum. And poor girl, she was at work. And I just said, you know, they've killed her. They've killed my mum.
Mark and David had been taken to Melksham Police Station. Both denied any knowledge of Antonietta's disappearance and were placed in different cells. Immediately after the arrest, investigators Steve Fulcher and Nick Shorten, along with forensic scientists, searched Antonietta's house.
There was nothing obvious that leapt out at you to think this was a crime scene. It was clean, it was tidy. Nothing appeared on first appearances out of place.
On the first floor, I found Mark Riley's room, which had some strange things in it, love letters written by Mark, and a range of Doctor Who memorabilia, masks and so on. And in the door, a punch mark, a hole in the door that had obviously been put there with a fist or a foot.
Then they went in the garden.
We both noticed, by a bird table which was right in the middle of the garden, what looked like fresh soil on the top of the grass. Just specks of it, but this was enough to alert us that the bird table maybe had been moved and something had happened there. So between the two of us, we moved the bird table, and it was immediately apparent that there was an area of turf that had been roughly cut and had been replaced. I lifted the edge of the turf, and underneath was a small pit that had been dug in the soil.
Inside the pit, pillowcases, charred where they'd been burned, and clearly bloodstained.
At that point, I think Steve and I both realised that there had indeed been a murder at this house.
It was imperative to find as much as possible, as quickly as possible, about Mark Riley and David Carburstow. It emerged Mark had been born in Birmingham in 1985, and his parents had separated when he was six. He'd moved with his mother to Bradford-on-Avon in Wiltshire and lived with her and his stepfather. But in 2006, tensions had developed and they asked him to leave. He moved into Amber Lodge in Trowbridge, a charity-run residential refuge for young homeless and unemployed people. It was there, in early 2008, he met David Carburstow, 4 years younger than him, aged 19.
They forged a relationship, a homosexual relationship, and a sexual relationship, we understand. David previously had not been in a homosexual relationship, to our knowledge.
David was born in 1989 and lived with his mother at Harleston in Norfolk. His father died when he was 6 months old, and he was known as Little David among the seven children in the household. In several ways, he was classed as vulnerable.
David had quite a troubled childhood and had come from an extended family. He'd been diagnosed as a child with a number of ailments, Asperger's syndrome, Tourette's, ADHD, and some other childhood problems in terms of his behaviour. He had been assessed as being a special needs child in terms of his educational needs.
Several times he left and then returned to the family home. In his mid-teens, he developed a relationship with a woman in her 30s and moved in with her for a time. But he got into trouble with the youth offending team in Norfolk, and they asked him to leave the area. David had many brushes with the law. He ended up at Amber Lodge. His relationship with Mark proved volatile. On one occasion, on a trip to meet his family in Norfolk, they visited a bar.
What's going on, David? Hey, you with me? Remember?
Come on, lads. Get him out. Get to him. Someone call the police.
Come on, get out, get out!
The police were called and Mark was put on a train back to Trowbridge. On another occasion in April 2008, he and David were in Parkland in Wiltshire.
Oh, yeah? You got something to tell me, have you?
It was your problem.
My problem? My problem? You're my problem? Oh, how are you doing? Can't police hunt you, you bastard. Go on. Keep working. Go on.
David did call the police, and Mark was given a police caution. That summer, the rift between the two deepened. There was heavy drug-taking among friends they made at Amber Lodge. Inside the premises, a strictly enforced anti-drugs rule operated, and when drugs were found in David's room, he was evicted and the couple separated. Mark found a job at Virgin, so he too had to leave Amber Lodge, which is for the unemployed. That October, he replied to Antonietta Guarino's advert for a lodger and, once again reconciled with David, hoped for him to move in. Now, Antonietta was missing, presumed murdered, and Mark and David in police cells in Melksham were denying all knowledge. But police couldn't prove even that Antonietta was dead. No body had been found.
You know, I think the main thing that I struggled with up until we found Mum was until I had something there, until I had my mum, it still might not be true.
But everything was about to change. Police were about to discover a secret love letter. For 2 days, two men suspected of murdering 61-year-old Antonietta Guarino from Trowbridge in Wiltshire had denied any involvement in her disappearance. Her 24-year-old lodger, Mark Riley, and his 19-year-old lover, David Carburstow, who was classed as a vulnerable adult, were being held separately at Melksham Police Station. By now, January the 29th, 2009, A field near Antonietta's house had been scoured in vain for a body or murder weapon, and officers had searched the countryside for her car. Forensic scientists examining her kitchen, which had been cleaned to waste level, had found traces of blood spatter on the ceiling, but police still didn't have enough evidence to charge the men. Then, as they went to Chippenham magistrates to be granted extra time to detain the men, a dramatic discovery was made. On a wall in the exercise yard at Melksham Police Station, where the men were being held, an officer found a letter.
And the letter had clearly been written by Mark Riley and left on the wall in the hope that when David came to exercise, David would pick it up and read it. The letter was quite extraordinary. It professed his love for David. He said he was going to take the fall for the murder and for David not to worry, and that once he got out of prison, they could marry and live happily ever after.
When police went back to interview Mark Riley, he changed his story. Police had already established that whilst Antonietta was with her family during Christmas and New Year, David, contrary to her instructions, had moved in with Mark. This explained Mark's many phone calls to Antonietta whilst she was away.
In hindsight, he was checking on her whereabouts to make sure she wasn't on her way home.
From having no home to call her own, Mark and David suddenly had their own space.
Oh, what? Oh. You made me spill that then.
I'm not cleaning it up.
You worried a bugger, it is your fault.
It's your bit, you clean it.
No!
And then on the 3rd of January, my mum turns up.
It's her, Sarah, get the cup.
Using the cup.
From then on, David lived in secrecy.
What are you doing?
What do you think?
Shut the door.
I've got to pee.
You'll have to go the other way.
You're joking.
David was having to come and go, avoid detection from Antonietta, and secretly climb back in using the wheelie bin, getting on top of the garage and climbing in through the window each night to spend the night with Mark Riley. He didn't wash on the premises.
Mark, this is stupid.
And this went on for some days, and clearly the tension between Mark and David increased.
Now, in the wake of his letter saying he'd take the blame for the killing, Mark gave police a new account of what he finally admitted were Antonietta's last moments on January the 8th.
Mate, I'm starving.
He said he'd been smoking cannabis all afternoon with David and was feeling paranoid.
But I hate going down there.
You can't, can I?
He says that whilst he was downstairs, about to go to the fridge, the electricity tripped for some reason when he touched something.
Oh, shit!
And the lights all went out. He was fearful because of his paranoia, and he saw a shadowy figure approach him. In fear, he picked up the nearest thing to hand and struck out with it.
He said he then managed to switch the lights on. In his hand was a hammer. On the floor was Antonietta, bleeding profusely from a head injury.
David! David!
He then went on to describe how he and David disposed of Antonietta's body. They grabbed a shower curtain, a duvet from the spare room, and a length of cable cut from a lawnmower extension lead to bind the body.
Because of the blood that was leaking from her head, they got a pillowcase and wrapped it around her head to try and soak up some of the blood.
Mark said they loaded Antonietta's body into her Toyota Yaris car, and David drove them to Bradford-on-Avon, to a field behind Mark's mother's house.
It's not flowing.
Mark waded out into the river, up to his neck, to make sure that Antonietta was out midstream in the full flow of the current. At that point, Antonietta's body sank, and Mark returned back to the shore.
Mark said they returned to the house to continue the cleanup. Police knew part of Mark's account might be true, but every detail would need checking.
We brought in a forensic scientist who has a specialism in electrical devices to test whether or not the power could have tripped in the way he described. And he found conclusively that it couldn't. And in fact, Mark Riley's account was simply untrue.
Detectives wanted to compare Mark's story with David's, but David, classed as a vulnerable person, initially proved a difficult interviewee.
I told you, I can't remember. I got ADHD, I never remember stuff. Mark told me to do it. I'm afraid of him.
But eventually, David gave an account which differed in detail from Mark's. He said he'd been a welcome guest in Antonietta's house.
Oh, hello, Prey.
Hello, darling.
on the 8th of January, he said that he had seen Antonietta and had greeted her as he came through the front door.
Hi.
Hi, mate.
He later admitted this was a lie. He said Mark remained downstairs, possibly doing some cleaning. David said he spent the next 3 hours upstairs watching TV. The TV flickered. Then he heard Mark.
David! David!
Mate, I've done her in.
Shit. Mark said to him that they had to clean the place. He had to help Mark. He said he was fearful of Mark and felt that he had to do what Mark was telling him to do.
Oh, come on, mate. We've got to sort it.
David said he continued feeling sick because of the smell, so couldn't remember much of what happened and didn't do much to help.
We've got to get it sorted. We've got to wrap the body.
Mark, I can't handle this.
All this blood.
All this blood, I feel sick.
I'll get the shower curtain. You go and get the duvet.
Why don't you do it?
Clear discrepancies, not only between their detailed accounts, but with evidence from the forensic team. In Mark's account, he hit Antonietta only once, but blood spatter from the ceiling indicated multiple blows.
So let me get this right. You're saying you only hit her once?
Yeah.
Only once. So when we find the body, and there's more than just one blow to the head, how are you going to account for that? It's because David did it.
Mark lost his temper with the interviewing officers. He threw his coffee at them. He picked up the tape machine and threw it across the interview room, narrowly missing the officers.
As we drew the accounts from Mark and David, simultaneously we were talking to witnesses and a much clearer picture was being built of how Antonietta met her death.
Mark and David returned from the river to clean up the kitchen.
Oh, shit.
Within moments, they changed their mind and called friends.
Yeah. See you in 10 minutes, Carol.
Cold and hungry, and with David high on drugs, they arrived at the house of their friends Steve Gurner and a girl called Laura.
You all right? Shit. You all right?
You all right?
You all right?
Hi, mate. You all right? Oh, it's been a mental night, I'm telling you.
Steve and Laura gave an account to police of what happened next.
Mark and David appear to have become rather peckish and ordered a Domino pizzas and some chocolate indulgences to be delivered.
It's Antonietta Guarino.
It's my mom's.
A-N.
Though Mark and David didn't offer an immediate explanation, it was clear something had happened.
Mate, that's proper bad.
Do you mind if I go for a bath?
No, whatever.
I'm still starving. Let's go get a burger.
David and Steve set off in Antonietta's car for McDonald's. For Steve, according to his later testimony in court, there was about to be a dramatic revelation.
So, what's the story? The note was on that.
It's me and Mark fighting. Well, not fighting.
So?
It's probably bad, actually. We killed a landlady.
Yeah, all right.
No. I told Mark, if you love me, if you really love me, then you'll hit her with a hammer.
You're shitting me.
No. No. We did it. We dumped the body in the river. That's why there was all that mud in that.
Steve Gurner thought that David was in fact joking about the story. They went on and bought their McDonald's, and Steve Gurner saw David take from the side pocket of the door a blue polythene bag, which David told him contained the hammer that they had used to murder Antonietta. He threw that hammer into one of the bins at the side of McDonald's.
After taking back the burgers, their night wasn't over. David and Steve went out again, joyriding the car, testing its limits and smashing the number plate.
Yeah!
By the next day, news of what David had told Steve about the murder had already spread.
No, it's cool. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
As Mark and David embarked on their spending spree, using Antonietta's credit card, buying sex toys, gay porn and an Xbox, lots of friends suddenly needed bribing for their silence.
It's a big screen in that, yeah.
Mum, on the TV?
Mark and David went through the house looking for items to offer as bribes. They drove the kitchen TV to a friend's house.
Look, we can't go around driving her car. Someone's going to recognise it.
Well, let's just dump the TV and then I'll sort it, yeah?
When Antonietta's daughter, Julie, was told about the bribes and how Mark and David had described wrapping the body, she recalled the day she visited the house seeking phone numbers to trace her mother.
While I was there, I thought, something strange. But I didn't know what it was. And it was the shower curtain that was missing. In her little bin, waste paper bin, in her bedroom, there was two jewellery boxes. And there was a TV missing. Mum had always had a TV in the kitchen. There was lots of little tiny things.
David's stepbrother told police that the morning after the murder, David rang him, trying to sell him the car. David said he and Mark had been in a fight with a man the previous night.
We got carried away, right? Right? We hit him on the head with a hammer. Right? He's dead, right? But
he was very clear that he said a man, not their landlady. Perhaps to vindicate his actions in attacking an old lady.
We used the car, right, to get rid of the body and dump it in the river. It's hot.
But his stepbrother said he couldn't buy the car without legal documents, which David and Mark didn't have. The following day, David and Mark tried to sell the car to a scrapyard in Trowbridge, who again refused without documentation. But the yard then did buy it from two people they knew, who were David and Mark's friends. But suspicious, they kept the car to one side. When they learned of the killing, they handed the vehicle to police. On January the 31st, 2009, amid mounting evidence, Mark and David were jointly charged with murder. Though their accounts of the killing itself had differed, they agreed in their description of where the body had been dumped. Both of them, independently, took Detective Steve Fulcher to the scene.
The deposition point that they chose was at the back of Mark Riley's parents' house. Upstream of that was a canal barge, which witnesses have told us was used by David and Mark to engage in sexual activity. So they knew the location very well.
An urgent operation was launched to find the body for the family and because it may provide crucial evidence as to how Antonietta died.
Two teams started working in conjunction with the river authorities to try and work out where we thought Antonietta potentially could have been swept from the point of her deposition. It was a major undertaking, very difficult because of the weather and very difficult because of the levels of water.
For the family, learning she'd been dumped in the River Avon added to their pain.
I hated the idea. I hated the idea of Mum being out there all on her own. It's silly to say, you know, she couldn't swim. I know she wouldn't have been swimming anyway, but it was the one, you know, she didn't have many fears, but water was one of her biggest fears, and she ended up in the water, all cold and all alone, and nobody was able to find her.
As the search for the body continued, police gathered further evidence. They drove Mark round Trowbridge.
Just down here on your left.
He took them to various places where he'd dumped blood-stained bedding and clothing, including a pond outside Virgin Mobile, where he worked. On a duvet cover and pillowcase, police found blood matching Antonietta's DNA taken from her toothbrush. Similar traces were found on Mark's own pillowcase and on Antonietta's car, along with her walking stick and rosary beads. Drops of blood matching David's were found below a light switch in the lounge and in the hallway. Police learned rubbish from the bin where David had dumped the hammer would have been taken to a landfill site at Compton Bassett. The owners halted operations for a fortnight while police searched, but the site is vast and the search was abandoned. Police did track down many of Antonietta's possessions which had been given away as bribes to buy silence.
A number of arrests were made and a lot of property was recovered, including most of Antonietta's jewellery.
Police discovered one of the final purchases made using Antonietta's money was the red Ford Fiesta in which David was sitting when he was arrested. Mark had bought it for him for £350 on January the 25th as a love gift. The search for Antonietta's body went on for 3 weeks.
The police dive unit was there doing that. And just long days and nights, and they really were long days and nights for me. I couldn't sleep properly, and all I thought about was, you know, them discovering my mum's body. I just wanted her body so that I could have a funeral.
Finally, police were forced to abandon the operation. Hours later, 50 yards from the outer limit of the search, a dog walker found Antonietta's body. She was floating, feet caught below the surface in tree roots, her head still in the pillowcase. It's believed she'd been trapped, slowly spinning, in the vortex of water beneath the weir at Greenland Mills.
When they brought her body out, she was covered in an inch-thick layer of silt, like a China doll. And even when she was on the bank, it wasn't clear that it was actually a body that we'd recovered. And I picked the a little corner of the silt off her. It was her flesh underneath the clay was as fresh as a living person.
What a sad way to end. You know, they destroyed her life, destroyed parts of our lives, and they destroyed my ability to say goodbye to her. To say goodbye to her. You know, I was glad and I was relieved to have her back. You know, she was mine again. Nobody else had to touch her. I was pleased to have her back.
A post-mortem revealed Antonietta died from severe head injuries caused by at least 12 blows from a blunt instrument. This meant Mark's account of a single blow could not be the whole truth. But police believed they now had a clear picture of what happened at her house on the evening of January the 8th. New home as he awaited trial to 24-year-old Mark Riley, former lodger of Antonietta Guarino, whom he was accused of murdering. Gloucester Prison, home in a young offenders section to Mark's boyfriend, David Carr Burstow, who'd moved in with Mark against Antonietta's strict instructions. Both had been remanded in custody by Chippenham magistrates on the 2nd of February 2009. Police had now put together their version of events which led to the killing at Antonietta's bungalow in Trowbridge on the 8th of January. They took into account injuries to the knuckles of Mark and David, damage to two doors, forensic evidence and testimony about what David had said to others. But it was what David himself told police that revealed tensions which investigators believe led to tragedy. Since Antonietta had returned after Christmas 2008, he'd been cooped up in Mark's bedroom for 5 days. He told police that afternoon he and Mark had a row over sex.
Mark, sit here.
Oh, not tonight, David.
Mark, sit here.
David, I've been working all day.
And we have to bear in mind at this time that Antonietta was sick and ill in her bed downstairs.
What's the point in buying all those sex toys, right?
I'm really tired, David.
Right, well, I'm leaving.
Shut up. She'll hear you.
You don't love me, yeah? Yeah? Just say it.
I do love you, David, but she'll hear you.
That's all you care about, yeah? It's her. If you don't love me, if you don't want me, forget.
David!
Open the door, David!
David! David!
This doesn't
concern
you! David!
I do
love you!
Oh! Police! Oh! I don't care
who
you are,
but
I want you out of my house!
Don't
you
worry! I'm leaving him!
Both of you, get out of
David!
My house!
I think the two men, Mark and David, then went back to Mark's bedroom.
Police base what they believe happened next on what David told Steve Gurner in the car on the night of the killing. David said to Steve he told Mark to prove his love by going downstairs and attacking Antonietta with a hammer. But David is a vulnerable adult. In the event, what he may or may not have said in conversations with Steve and his stepbrother, conversations he later denied having, was not believed by the jury to be sufficient evidence to connect him in any way to the murder. There remains a black hole over the details of how Antonietta met her death.
David! David!
David claims the first he knew of her murder was when Mark called him downstairs to the kitchen. 7 months after the murder, at Bristol Crown Court, Mark pleaded guilty to murder and obstructing the coroner by not revealing what had happened to the body. He was therefore never cross-examined and refused even to leave his cell for any part of the trial. David admitted obstructing the coroner, but denied murder. He said he was in fear of Mark. It had been an inconvenience having Antonietta return to the house where he and Mark had been living freely, and he was upstairs when the attack happened. He denied telling Mark to hit Antonietta with the hammer. Mark was jailed for 21 years. David was found not guilty of murder and, to the family's horror, was jailed for just 4 years.
Mark didn't even have the decency to show any level of remorse to come up and hear what he was being sentenced to. David Carburster, what he did was awful. What he got sentenced was nothing. Disappointed. Absolutely disappointed.
I don't know the truth. I don't know what happened in my mum's kitchen, because there was only three people that know, and one's dead and the other two aren't saying.
We respect that verdict, obviously, but it leaves so many unanswered questions. How did those blows come to be rained on Antonietta's head? If Mark insists that he only hit her once, how did that happen? There are so many unanswered questions.
Sometimes I get to a stage where I think, oh, you know, I haven't done something, or I'm feeling a little bit lost, and then I remember what it is. I think, I haven't spoken to my mum. And, you know, and I'll never, and, you know, that eats away at me, not only the way that she got deposited in the river, and, you know, but the fact that I can never hear her voice, never speak to her again. And for, you know, for a little bit of money.